In today's news headlines, the final night of the Republican National Convention took place Thursday at the White House in Washington, D.C., the first time a sitting president used the taxpayer-funded building as a visual backdrop for a partisan election campaign, giving a rambling and largely scripted address that was filled with lies and ran about 70 minutes long before a mostly maskless crowd of about 1,500 people. Trump made multiple gaffes, including saying, "I profoundly accept this nomination," instead of proudly.
"I profoundly accept this nomination for President of the United States."
Gloating over the impropriety of holding the event at the White House, Trump slammed Democrats, saying this.
"This November, we must turn the page forever on this failed political class. The fact is, I'm here." What's the name of that building? But I'll say it differently. The fact is, we're here and they're not. To me, one of the most beautiful buildings anywhere in the world, and it's not a building, it's a home, as far as I'm concerned. Not even a house, it's a home.
That's Trump on Thursday night, the final night of the RNC at the White House, where he claimed that the taxpayer-funded residence was his home rather than a temporary residence for elected presidents. Walter Schaub, former director of the United States Office of Government Ethics, who had resigned in protest of Trump's overstepping, tweeted, quote, "This abomination may be the most visible misuse of official position for private gain in America's history. It is an abuse of the power entrusted to this man, the breach of a sacred trust. It is the civic equivalent of a mortal sin, maybe a religious one, too." The New York Times described Trump's speech as, quote, "a crusade against left-wing ideology and violent social disorder fought against the backdrop of a virus that Republicans largely describe as a temporary handicap on the economy." The Washington Post fact-checked 25 false claims, calling Trump's address a, quote, "tidal wave of tall tales, false claims, and revisionist history." Much of the speech was largely focused on claiming that the current unrest over racial injustices are a preview of the America that his rival Joe Biden would usher in. Trump and others failed to acknowledge that the current unrest is unfolding under Trump's rule. He painted a dark picture of nationwide demonstrations and lamented the fact that he needed mayor's permissions to send federal troops into cities.
"There is violence and danger in the streets of many Democrat-run cities throughout America. This problem could easily be fixed if they wanted to. Just call. We're ready to go in. We'll take care of your problem in a matter of hours. Just call. We have to wait for the call. It's too bad we have to, but we have to wait for the call."
Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, who's been implicated in numerous crimes, also spoke on Thursday with no hint of irony about the importance of law and order, and also echoed the claim that violence in American cities were what Biden would usher in.
"These continuous riots in Democratic cities gives you a good view of the future under Biden."
Giuliani also made far-fetched claims of Trump's work ethic.
"President Trump, with his boundless love of our country and all our people, his disciplined work ethic, his exceptional ability to inspire, and his deep understanding of our system of government and the strength of American values is the man we can trust to preserve and even improve our way of life."
Outside the White House, a large mass of protesters gathered and attempted to drown out Trump's nomination acceptance speech. And while GOP Senator Rand Paul, protected by security guards and police, walked through the crowds of activists toward the White House, he was surrounded by people demanding justice for the police killing of Breonna Taylor, who was killed in Louisville in the state of Kentucky, which he represents.
"Say her name! Say her name! Say her name!
On Friday, Rand Paul spoke with Fox News and implied that the activists would have killed him. He said, if it weren't for the police, quote, "I don't think we'd have survived." None of the protesters appeared armed. Meanwhile, a new report shows that white supremacists and armed militias have infiltrated police departments across the U.S. The report by the Brennan Center for Justice was authored by Michael German, a former FBI special agent. Thousands of people gathered in D.C. at the Lincoln Memorial on Friday to mark the 57th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King's March on Washington, where he gave his most famous speech titled I Have a Dream. Crowds of people gathered, largely wearing masks and separating in socially distanced groups. The march's organizers say that were it not for the coronavirus pandemic, they would have seen an even larger gathering. The event was titled the Get Your Knee Off Our Necks March on Washington. Democratic Vice Presidential nominee Kamala Harris addressed marchers in a taped speech.
The road ahead, it is not going to be easy. But if we work together to challenge every instinct our nation has to return to the status quo and combine the wisdom of longtime warriors for justice with the creative energy of the young leaders today, we have an opportunity to make history right here and right now.
That's an excerpt of a taped speech by California Senator Kamala Harris to Friday's March on Washington commemorating the 57th anniversary of Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech. Late on Thursday, a coalition of more than 350 faith leaders endorsed the Democratic ticket of Joe Biden for president, saying there was, quote, a need for moral leadership and, quote, hope for a better future. Also on Thursday, news broke of an investigation into a right-wing organization's robocalls to black voters, warning them against voting by mail. Protests continue in Kenosha, Wisconsin, where police shot a black man named Jacob Blake in the back, leaving him paralyzed, and a 17-year-old heavily armed white boy who idolizes police killed two white activists with Black Lives Matter. The two victims have been identified as Anthony Huber and Joseph Rosenbaum. Jacob Blake Sr., the father of the police shooting victim, spoke to CNN and described how his son was fighting for his life while laying shackled to his hospital bed.
Then his next question was, why did they shoot me so many times? And I said, baby, they weren't supposed to shoot you at all. You know, he's paralyzed from the waist down. Why do they have that cold steel on my son's ankle? He can't get up. He couldn't get up if he wanted to. So what was, that's a little overkill to have him shackled to the bed. That just makes no sense to me.
That's Jacob Blake's father describing how his son remains shackled to his hospital bed while he recovers from a grisly police shooting that has left him paralyzed. Meanwhile, Kyle Rittenhouse, who has been arrested for the shooting deaths of Huber and Rosenbaum at the protest against Blake's shooting, has now been charged with multiple felonies. The six felony charges include first-degree reckless homicide, first-degree intentional homicide, and attempted first-degree intentional homicide. The police officer that shot Blake remains free. And that does it for our headlines today.